Welcome to Gay Geek Bizarre Show, episode 50, and it's a Sunday, May 7th, 2017. I am Nard.
And this is Ray.
Yes, and joining us today is Joseph Swartz. He is the author of the novel, The Initiate. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me. Appreciate it.
And just since last week was Star Wars week, may the Schwartz be with you.
That's right. Very appropriate. That's
yes,
right.
Yes, yes. Well, the Schwartz has awakened, so yes, yeah. It worked night shift.
But. Yeah, so this is the 50th episode. It's kind of a milestone, right? But, you know, it's a special episode, so we have a guest. It's always good to have guests on special episodes on a milestone. So before we go on, we're talking about The Initiate. We just want we do our weekly updates, and we just talk about what we've done so far. Ray, what did we do last weekend?
Well, we went and celebrated Cinco de Mayo on Friday.
Oh, that's right. And Maynard
had several margaritas.
I did two.
Mm-hmm. Several.
Two. I guess that is several, sure.
And got drunk, and then we had to carry him staggering into the theater to watch Guardians of the Galaxy.
And got plowed many times to that right there. No, it was good. Joseph, did you get to see it already?
I've not seen it. I just got back from Claw myself, so I've been kind of working a blue streak. But I was thinking to myself, with Cinco de Mayo, it was actually that marks 10 years since my first trip to Texas.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah, my first trip to Texas was Cinco de Mayo back in 2007, and I went to San Antonio. So I had to kind of live it vicariously through memories, but Texas is a great place to celebrate the holiday. So.
I think it was last year when I first met you. We were at the Vendor Mall and TBRU.
Yes.
I remember that one, that's right. Yes. I remember you were tying up a friend of mine.
So. Yeah, that sounds like something I do.
So. Yeah. Okay.
Obviously, you hadn't seen all the pictures from Claw.
Oh, really? Okay. That's good. So what else happened? Ray did a marathon. You've been watching.
That's right. I watched Sense8. It came out on Friday, too. So I did my marathon yesterday. I was a complete, utter couch potato yesterday.
Oh, really?
That must be nice. And watched all of Sense8.
Mm-hmm. So, do you watch any of those, Joseph? No?
No. I'm a little bit late to the party when it comes to streaming and everything. Actually, me and my one of the foster dads, we just went on a binge with Stranger Things. So,
that's pretty good. That's pretty good.
Stranger Things, yeah.
I have done that Stranger Things already. It's a good series. And Sense8, actually, I recommend it, second Sense8, because there's lots of gay sex.
Oh. Well, not this season.
Well, not this season? No, okay.
Well, the Christmas episode, but not this season.
Oh, yeah, okay. So, it's always recommendable. So much.
And I always watch 13 Reasons Why.
Yes. Yeah, I've been hearing good things about that.
Okay. So.
But that was my weekend, the day we were recording, because I got Joseph to come over and talk about his
That's
book.
Right. I'm glad you were able to join us, because actually today I had some softball games today, but we lost. So I
just wanted to let you know.
Yeah. And then I called Ray. Ray, we have a schedule with Joseph today. And then he said, you didn't confirm last month's Friday, but then I have my equipment. I'm ready to go. So Ray was able to call you up, and it's a good thing you were available for. Yeah. Or this interview.
Oh, no, absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, before we get an interview, tell us about Claw since you were there.
Yeah.
It was my Claw was.
Tell us what Claw is, because a lot of people have no clue what Claw is.
Claw is a it's a leather run that happens in Cleveland, Ohio, typically in the later part of April. I mean, the weekend kind of varies, but it's a it stands for Cleveland Leather Awareness Weekend. I think it might have changed. I know it's changed a couple times, but it's a 3-day, or 4-day weekend about education. It has classes about particular fetishes. It has the vendor mart. It has silent auctions, fundraising. It's a great event to go to if you're curious about new stuff. It kind of, for me personally, it kind of takes on the feel of it's one third frat party, one third sex party, one third family reunion. So got to see a lot of folks.
Sounds like a lot of Southern family reunions.
Yeah, that's right.
The family tree is kind of like a circle. Yeah, really. It's like a tree eating itself. I got to see a lot of people I haven't seen in a while, and my friends from James from Portland, and friends from Philly, Bruiser from New York, and a few other people, and actually managed to make some new friends too. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah, so the only event like that I've ever been, but only actually the vendor mall is at IML. Is it as big or smaller than IML? That's the only experience that I know. So that's why I reference.
Well, the thing is, it's funny because this is the year that Claw, because for the last couple of years they were in Independence, Ohio, which is a suburb of Cleveland. And this year they signed the lease with the Westin downtown. So the Claw moved back downtown. And it's kind of funny because I jokingly said that it reminded me of like being back in college, because it's like it's spread out over like four or five hotels in like a 3-block radius, and it's it was weird because I was like, we were talking to our friends, it's like, okay, oh well, I'm gonna go to the cigar tent in Delta Quad, but we're gonna here at the Hamilton House, they're gonna have the fisting seminar, so it was weird. It was
amazing. It was Ray. We should go one time.
Yeah, no, it's neat, but like they had like a lot of classes and a lot of activities, and I mean it was cool. And Cleveland, Cleveland is going through a little bit of a renaissance, so it was nice to bear witness to that. So
how many years have they been doing Claw?
I think it started in the late 90s.
Oh really, that long?
Okay. yeah so I mean they keep track of it by like, you know, Claw 16, Claw 17 with the year, so but I know it's a fairly recent thing, but
wow,
yeah, but it's
did you present this on?
Do you have a seminar or?
Oh, when you said present, I'm like,
Well, we know you went up there and anyway, represented, because I've seen the pictures. Yeah. But
I'm sure you present a lot.
No classes for me. But actually, that is a chair. I think. But thank you for giving me a little hat tip to about that. I actually, at Spring Iniquity, a little leather event here in Houston a few weeks ago, I actually did teach my first class, a rope bondage 101. So, it's though it's funny because going to Claw, you know, they had this one particular thing called Bound and Beautiful, where they had, you know, models bound up, and you can bid on the model, you can bid on the thing, whatever. And I walked through the gallery, and there's nothing like comparing yourself to a giant to make yourself feel small, because I was like, oh, okay, so I have more studying to do. But it's cool. I mean, it's you know, you have the drive to see what is possible, and if you can, you know, duplicate that, that's great. And like, you know, I mean, I'm fortunate enough that I feel like I'm in a position where I with rope and things I can pass some knowledge on to people, but I'm realizing that, you know, I have a lot of more knowledge that I have to obtain myself, so
mm-hmm. Well, that's okay. I still can't figure out the Celtic knot, so.
Oh really?
Really?
Because I've seen the bane for Ray, the last couple of weeks. I've seen Ray studying some rope lately, and he has some contraption somewhere there upstairs. I don't know. I don't want to talk about it. But
the daddies might be listening.
Oh, that's right.
They haven't been informed yet.
They don't know what.
It's better to ask for forgiveness than ask for permission.
Exactly.
I just made a room full of toys. So. Okay, so we have you here in the show because, you know, this show is about gay stories, geek topics and bizarre news that we ever get. And the gay section here, I guess, is the our topic of about your book.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry.
So what inspired you to write this novel?
Well, it's kind of funny. It's like, I was thinking about that on the way over here. It's like, I would never have believed that a book could happen by accident, but honestly, it really did happen by accident. I don't know if people, I'm sure my friends know and everything like that, but basically what happened was back in 2016, in June 1st, 2016, my partner of 2 years passed away. He was, my partner Gary, he was 54, and it was unexpected. And obviously, like, that led to major life changes and led to a lot of fallout that I've kind of had to process. And I think that, and at the time, like, you know, I was going through a lot, and I was going through some life changes of my own, and, you know, including, like, relocating from Dallas to Houston and, you know, organizing things and taking care of affairs and everything. And I was dealing with some stress. I mean, obviously. And what happened was, is like, you know, the book has illustrations. It was kind of done backwards. Like I have a Tumblr myself. If I can plug that, my Tumblr is Joe Dog TX on Tumblr. I do, as mentioned, I do rope bondage. I like, you know, to do my little rope bondage and take pictures and things like that. I crossed paths with an artist by the name of Papacon, who has his own Tumblr, and he commented on one of my bondage pictures, and then we got to talking, and I actually commissioned him to kind of clean up a photo that I'd taken of one of my bondage sessions, where like I liked the model, and I liked the rope work, but I mean the background was messy or whatever. So he redrew it, and he made it look phenomenal. He made it look like it was a work of art, which is what it was. And I guess, and this was like in the summer of 2016, late summer, early fall. And at that time I was looking for, I guess you could say, pleasant distractions. So I was like, oh, okay, well, this is like a fun, pleasant distraction I can have. So I commissioned him to do like another piece and then another piece. So like kind of simple pieces. And I then, I saw some of his other work was more complex, you know, as far as he's, if you seen, and if you see the artwork, I mean, it's kind of obviously inspired by Tagami, you know, like the Bara, you know, muscle guys, fantasy, things like that.
Okay.
And I kind of, I had this idea that was kicking around in my head as far as a concept goes, about like, you know, ritualized BDSM, between, you know, bears and stuff like that. And I went back and forth about it. And I it was kind of a more complex concept. So I emailed him the idea, and I actually had some friends who were willing to let me use their likeness for the drawings. And he started coming up with these concepts that were way more complex and intricate. And so that featured like kind of, you know, paganistic elements, and you know, it kind of like, and it was the same characters over and over again. And I was starting to share the images with my friends, and my friends were really taken by the images as well. And it's like, and they were like, and people at first was like, oh my God, Joe, I didn't know you could draw. And I'm like, no, I can't. So I can just be like, I can pay somebody who can. But that's the thing that kind of spurred me on, because at the time I was like, you know, I had commissioned like three or four drawings, and it was getting a good reaction, and I knew that I was coming up with the concepts, I was coming up with what I wanted to see, but Papacon, the artist, he was the one who was doing all the work. Like, I mean, he and his work was phenomenal and everything, but I thought to myself, if there's any way that I can take ownership of these art pieces, it's like, because I mean, obviously I'm commissioning them and I'm coming up with the concepts, but if there's any way I can take ownership myself, I have to bring something to the table. So then I thought, well, you know, what if I like kind of write a story that goes with the art? And so that's how the art thing, that's how the whole ball got rolling. And
that's
then
that's how the accident happened.
Yeah. Okay. And then it's like, I think that it was because I didn't see how the two things were connected, like wanting a pleasant distraction and then wanting to take ownership of it. Because I basically started writing it as like, from the angle of as a fantasy, but then I kind of unconsciously started using real conversations and real events that happened as to like, to progress the story, things that had happened to me, things that had been sent to me, particularly a lot of things between me and Gary. And when I started doing that, and it was, I got to, God love my friends, especially my foster daddies, Daddy Lloyd and Sir Robert, because they knew what was going on way before I did. Mm-hmm. And particularly because not only with the writing and what was being put down and coming out of me, but also when you see the artwork too, it's like there is a character who really resembles my partner. And for the longest time, I didn't see it. I based it off of another friend, you know, who again looks similar. And I kept saying, you know, people ask me like, you know, oh, is that based on you and Gary? And I'm like, no. And then I'm like, okay, yeah, no.
Maybe it is now.
Yeah,
see, I'm only like three, four chapters in, and I can already see that.
Yeah,
And I already know, and I've never really met Gary, but I hear people talking about him in the pictures and what you've told me about him. I'm like, oh my God.
Mm-hmm. It's a real representation then.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's kind of funny. It's like, I mean, you know, I feel that, I mean, obviously it's like there's fantastical elements, and it's the nice thing about the written word is like the illustrations is like, you know, you can take imperfections and streamline them and make them the way that they should be, or make them the way that are, that should, that make them, present them in a way that makes them look better than reality. But it's like, but you have to have a reality to base it on. And it's like, I felt like, you know, I actually did have a lot of reality to base it on. And the more I wrote, because what was happening towards the later half of the year, I mean, obviously, I think 2016 kind of took a nosedive for everybody in the latter half of 2016. So I that's when I really just threw everything I had into the story, because I was like, I didn't want to deal with my own reality. So I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to create this alternate reality that I want to be in. And I can, you know, writing it made me feel better. And I actually started sharing, it made me feel better with, like, not only like the things that were going on in my personal life, but the things that were going on in the world around me. And I started sharing the, my writings with some of, like, a small test audience, and they encouraged me to keep going. And basically it was like, I thought about just like, you know, putting it on like a website or something. But then I got to the point, I'm like, I cannot just let this die on a website. I'm like, I want it to be something that's real, that I can hold and I can touch, and I can, you know, as a tribute to Gary and what we did. And like, and actually, I mean, that's part of the reason why the book is dedicated to him as well. So,
So we have a couple of more questions, but I do have one question that you mentioned earlier that kind of interests me. You said that there is a ritualistic aspect of bondage. Is it something like of a spiritual, or in what way is it ritualistic?
Well, for me, it's like, you know, by nature, I am a very impatient person, you know, and I think that learning how to do rope bondage taught me patience in a way that I did not have before. And it is kind of a meditative process. I mean, at least for me, is like, you know, when you are taking the time to get it right, and it's like, and not only that, but you're in close proximity to another person, and you're exploring them, and you're having to be mindful of what, you know, what they're feeling as they're being tied up and everything like that. And it's different than just that's the thing, is like, it's more erotica and not porn, you know what I mean? It's like, it's because it's like, I got to actually thinking about when I was starting doing the book too, it's like, I mean, the difference between erotica and porn is like, you know, I think porn, for lack of a better term, I mean, I'm not bashing it, but porn is a little bit one dimensional and it's a little bit easy, you know, and it's not bad, but it's like, but I mean, I found myself in that time, you know, both in the writing and also in my actual play, is like, I wanted to have a deeper connection. Okay. And it's a way for me to have you know, a deeper connection. And I think that, you know, in a way too, it's like, I think male bodies are beautiful, and it's like, and I like the way that rope displays them, and, you know, and puts, you know, and shows off the best assets and everything. And it's like, it's a way that you know, I mean, I'm crazy blessed, and the guys that I tie up, they don't need my help to look hot, but but seeing them bound and gagged, I mean, that makes them even hotter in my mind. So I'm like, okay. But it's a personal thing too. But I mean, I try to make sure that it's a way that they get something out of it, and I've been very blessed that, you know, people come back for more. So
yeah. So Ray, you have experience with bondage also, and
allegedly.
Okay, allegedly. So I'm probably I would say ignorant about it, and I do learn a lot this way through Ray. He's my he's my guide whenever I ask about bondage and everything.
Well, Fraser, guide, we're all going to hell.
I'm kind of scared about that. True. Yeah. So
no, I was kidding.
Yeah. So okay. In the process that you're done.
Mm-hmm.
You're done with tying, and what is the process of actually releasing the person or removing the bondage?
Well, the thing is like the way that I've had this discussion with some people. It's like people because some people have said, oh, like, well, I don't really, bondage doesn't appeal to me because it's boring. It takes too much time and everything. The way that I look at it is like, if you're going to do a scene with somebody, well, first of all, it's like, a gorgeous guy is standing in front of you naked and letting you tie him up. So I'm like, if that doesn't appeal to you, then that appeals to me.
Okay.
So I'm like, okay. But secondly, it's like, bondage is a great foundation for a play session because, you know, when you have somebody secured and comfortable and, you know, presented in a way where they can't, you know, escape, if you were, You can go down so many avenues. You can do things like CBT or tit torture or, you know, sensation play or, you know, pain play or, you know, everything like that. And I think that it's like a spice. It's like it's something that you can add to other activities, and it makes both things pop, at least for me. And as far as the releasing goes, I mean, the most important piece of equipment that you should have in your rope bag is a pair of
scissors.
EMT shears, because you have to be ready to kiss that rope goodbye in like 10 seconds if they're cramping or if they're hurting or something goes wrong. But I mean, but as far as the act of untying, I mean, that's a big part of the fun too, is because it's like, you know, and as long as they're comfortable and happy, I mean, you can take your time doing it and they can gradually have movement come back and, you know, regain their sense of independence and everything. And that's kind of cool to watch. So,
and a lot of guys just like to be bound,
being that restrictive
and everything. So, I mean, you don't have to do all the other stuff. A lot of guys just like to be restrained.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. But it's, well, and the funny thing is, it's like, you know, cause I think I've told you this, is like, you know, I think I feel like I've kind of like cornered the market, because it's like, because when you see literature of bondage, like instructional books and everything, like I would dare say like 90% of it is pictures of women being bound and everything, which, you know, I mean, all knowledge is applied knowledge and everything like that. But you can learn from it. But I mean, that's like most of the images you see when you see men tied up. At least, again, from like my experience when I was like trying to research books and things, it was like, you know, again, like the younger jock type and everything. And I know this is going to come as a shock to some people, but I have a type, I've been told.
What kind of type?
I wonder too.
You know, I like my Santa Bears. And so I was like, and then I actually have I don't know if he's listening, but I actually have a friend in Chicago, Slade Travis. Hey, Slade, if you're listening, who we kind of go after the same type. And he's been doing bondage for like over a decade and a half, I think, or something like that. And he shared some pictures one day of him, of a really, really hot guy that he tied up, like big daddy bear bound in a jock with, you know, silver beard and everything like that. And I still remember I saw that and I looked at that and I pointed at the screen and I'm like, that, I want to learn how to do that. And I started, you know, I started learning how to do knots and then figuring out how they applied to the body and everything. And he and other people really encouraged me, but it's like, it's been a pleasant surprise for a really long, for like almost 2 years now, is that like big burly guys, you're right. I mean, the big burly guys want it too. It's just that they get overlooked. And I'm like, you know, I will happily swoop in and take care of your needs. So, hey.
That's right. So I want to read a section of your book.
All right. So let's see.
So we can.
I was not told what section he's reading, so this would be interesting. So.
Okay. Excuse me. Silas and Arthur released Jake's tits from between their toes. Jake cried out and sat back on his heels. As he caught his breath, Arthur took his own foot and laid it against Jake's tightening balls. Silas took his own foot and continued to trace it upward against Jake's body. Jake looked down at the foot as if it were a serpent climbing his neck. Silas planted his foot against Jake's throat and let it rest there for a moment. Jake was trembling.
Good section.
That's where I'm at, by the way.
Okay.
Oh, so that's where you were. You used
to. Well, actually, I'm a couple pages past that, but I like that.
Oh, well,
the image of that. So,
yeah. So, speaking of images like that, and do you think, I guess my question is, are there a lot of parallelism in your life in the book and this one, and actual experiences like, oh, maybe I could tell a story of what happened to me here, so I'll put it in the book. Is there a lot of that?
I mean, it's kind of interesting because it's like, that passage that you actually just mentioned, actually was kind of based off of something that, was based off of something that happened to me, actually the weekend that I met Gary. Gary and I met each other at, we met at each other at a leather run in Dallas back in 2014. And, one of our first play dates, we were playing around and everything like that. And one of my fetishes is feet. So I was asked if I could service his feet, and he said sure and everything. And he had put a temporary chain around my neck at the time for the weekend. And, I remember Gary, he was wearing like knee-high boots and a kilt, and he put me against the wall and he planted his boot on my chest and then unlaced his boot and like pressed down while he was unlacing his boot. And I'm like, oh, okay. And then he did it with the other boot, and then he was barefoot, and then he had me start servicing his feet. And I was like, okay, I was like all nervous and everything like that. And then, little fucker, he slipped it under my collar and then jerked his leg back towards him. So like, essentially like he jerked my neck and head and entire body forward with his foot, you know, using the collar. And he did that, and my thought was like, I got to remember that damn move. That is an excellent freaking move. And I'm like, okay, so that was what was kind of burned into my mind. But as far as like other elements that made their way into the book, I mean, it's it's weird. It's, I mean, I, you know, I don't want to give away too many plot details, but it's like,
sure.
But like the opening set piece. I mean, I can talk about chapter one is like, you know, Jake is stranded at a bus station in Canada. That actually was something that happened to me back in 2009. Once again, I was on a vacation for visiting a kink friend in Toronto, and I had to go home by way of Montreal. And I was taking the bus from Montreal back to the States, and I was between paychecks, and like I had no money in my account for a few days, and I was stuck in a foreign country, and I, you know, this is 2009, so like my phone wasn't working, and I'm like, and you know, and I'm hungry, and I have like these bilingual beggars coming up to me asking me for money, and I'm like, I want to go home. And so it was it was weird, and it's like I had to stay at that bus station, I think, because there was weather delays too, so I sat in the bus station in Montreal for like 6 hours just waiting for my bus to show up, and like I couldn't, there was no, all I had was my own thoughts, and like, so that was something that I was like, oh, okay, well, this is something that maybe you can utilize as a plot point, because it's like I didn't want to, I mean, obviously, that, like I said, there's fantastical elements and everything, but like I wanted to make it as real as possible, because I mean, in my personal opinion, I think that sometimes with fantasy and sci-fi, people use, for lack of a better term, people use magic as a cheat. It's, yeah. Because like, I mean, it, you know, I didn't, you can only get away with a book so many times. Like, suddenly out of nowhere, a cloud of dust and, you know, poof. It's like, no, that's lazy writing. You have to kind of explain. But I was fortunate enough because the first picture that I commissioned is actually from chapter 5, the candle picture.
Oh,
okay. Which I know you guys can't see, but if you buy the book, you can take a look. But the image for chapter 5 was actually the first image that I commissioned for the artist. And in a way that kind of helped because I was like, okay, we know the midway. I started at the midway point of the story. And then I thought to myself, like, okay, this is the midway point. So how do we get from the beginning to here? And so I kind of like reverse engineered the beginning of the first half of the book. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, see, in my book, I got to the midpoint. Mm-hmm. And then I fucked it up, and now I can't figure out how to straighten it out to get to the end point that I want to do. So it's been a long figuring it out process. So. Wow. But where can people get your book?
Well, people can get my book on Amazon. It's on print on demand. If you do a search for The Initiate by Jay Swartz, it's available on paperback and Kindle. I'm actually going to try to, I actually did a book signing at Claw. Which I was proud about, and I'm gonna
That's
try.
Awesome!
To, yeah, it was.
Congratulations! That's good.
It was incredible, and a shout out to my friends Tim Brew and Mason Stryker, who in particular because it was kind of crazy because like my I kind of went on a tear and finished the book like a few weeks earlier than anticipated, and I finished it like 3 days before Claw, and my friends were like, you need to bring some to Claw and you can sell. And I was like, okay, so like it was crazy because I ordered the book, but I had to order it and have it shipped to the hotel in Ohio. Mm-hmm. And then when I got to Ohio, that's when I actually got to touch my book for the first time. So I'm like, oh my God.
Oh, and that was a good feeling.
Yeah,
right there.
It was. And
it's like your baby right there.
Yeah.
And how many pictures did he post of him and his book together?
I actually have a little bed for it. It's cool, and it's like I was happy because like I brought 10 copies to sell at the table, and I was walking around and shout out again to my Facebook friends because they've like seen this process for the last 7 months, and I'm sure that I've irritated some of them, but a lot of Facebook friends were at the event, and I had a sample copy in my backpack that I was showing people. And I had to stop carrying it around because people were actually buying it out of my backpack, and I'm like, you know, I'm legally selling something out of my backpack at a run, and I'm making money. This is crazy. It's uh-huh. like yeah, it was. I felt like a bootblack. It was interesting.
That's right.
So,
if you had a if you had the chance to put it in an audiobook, who would you like it to do the audio?
Believe it or not, that's actually being discussed.
Awesome.
A friend of mine from Pennsylvania, again Mason. Shout out to Mason. He says he's done voiceover work, so we're talking about that. But it was funny. It's funny that you mentioned that because when writing dialogue got better, I tried to do because I hear the voices of the characters in my own head,
mm-hmm.
and it's like with Silas in particular, it's like it's a little bit of Sean Connery. Yes, the,
oh, okay.
Yeah, sorry, I doubt Sean Connery would read my book, but if he did, then I would certainly pay for it.
There
it
should be
hysterical. So, but
that's very good, yeah. Sean Connery.
Yeah, right, exactly.
And but, now everybody that listens to this podcast that goes by his butt's going to hear Sean Connery every time Silas speaks.
That's right. Yeah. So, but no, I mean, I've actually been on Audible, and like I know that, and I've looked at professional actors too and everything. I know that it's kind of, again, a dichotomy because, like, I mean, the type of voice that I would want to read this book is like, you know, I guess the type of voice that I would, that of someone of a mature, you know, male who can do characters and everything. It was actually kind of funny because there's a program on iPad called Natural Reader, which will read written words back to you.
Oh, okay.
So when I was writing this, to edit myself, I actually had it read back to me, and it read it in kind of a flat male voice, but that was helpful. But it was funny because, like, one of the options as far as voices was, like, you know, like a female Russian voice, and like,
really,
yeah, hearing the book read in like a female Russian. I'm like, oh, this is like, no, this is not good. So I know that casting is an important thing you gotta think about, but
that is good.
Yeah. So it's like, as read by Tatiana, you know, it's like
Tatiana, Tatiana voice. Okay. So actually, like, you know, that's our segment for the gay, and we do the Geek and Bizarre the show. So we have some articles actually that probably you, Joseph, could probably give us some reactions.
Sure.
And that's what we usually do when we have guests in the show.
Shock and awe. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So for our geek this week, we found this personality software.
Mm-hmm.
Gain insight how and why people think, act, and feel the way they do. This service applies linguistic analysis and personality theory to infer attributes from a person's unstructured text. And it uses it doing Twitter.
Oh, really?
So it uses Twitter to construct profiles for you. Let me make sure I'm getting mine and not Maynard's, because Maynard apparently is.
Mine's in Firefox. Go ahead with yours.
I'm on Google. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. So we ran the service on mine, and this is the output that I got. You are helpful and analytical. You are emotionally aware. You are aware of your feelings and how to express them. You're empathetic. You feel what others feel and are compassionate towards them. Actually, I'm very empathetic. And you're also altruistic. You feel fulfilled when helping others and will go out of your way to do so. Your choices are driven by desire for well-being. You consider both tradition and independence to guide a large part of what you do. You're highly respected in the groups you belong to and follow their guidance. And you like to set your own goals to decide how to best achieve them. Now, that's mine.
Mm-hmm.
And Maynard's pretty much sums up, you're an asshole.
Yes, that's right. Can you just the first sentence of it, and I don't want to go through it. For some reason, I do use my Twitter account, the login, and then you read news, and I don't really post much for the past how many years now. What's the first sentence in mind?
You are skeptical.
Okay.
You are self-focused. You are more concerned with taking care of yourself than taking time for others. Trust me, I've known this for years.
Right.
You are hardened.
I don't think that was written in the.
You are hardened. You think that people should generally rely more on themselves than other people, and you deliberate. You can think through decisions before making them.
Uh-huh. So up yours, whatever that app is. I don't know. I don't think maybe because...
Well, you're sounding very skeptical right now.
That's right. I am skeptical right now. Yes, I am. I do not believe that maybe it's just drawing conclusions because I didn't post much, or because the things that I...
Or maybe the key things that you posted about.
Maybe.
So skeptical you
and most of them are about Bear Podcast back then and Gay Geek Bizarre. So probably... And the titles are usually very explicit, like, you know, I don't know what are the, penis something or dick something. I have those titles in the show, and maybe they're scanning off of that, and it thinks I'm an asshole. I don't know.
So we'll post the link on the website and in the show notes, so you can go try it yourself.
Do you use Twitter?
No, I'm more of a Facebook person.
I'm a Facebook.
But I read some article too that like there was like some artificial intelligence that was like learning from Twitter how to talk, and like, you know, and she was like scanning algorithms, and she became like a porn addicted white supremacist.
Oh, that's right. Yes, exactly. Yeah, it was reading off, and
yeah, it was weird. So like, yeah, but
yeah, it was. It's like a bot. It was studying, and then you're right.
Yes, exactly. I read about that. The people online, they ruin everything.
We're gonna shut that down right now. Okay, so I have a good bizarre story here, but it might sound painful for some of the audience because it is about being trapped, and not in a good way.
Mm-hmm.
So a man trapped in a penis ring for a couple of days, freed by firefighters. Do you know anyone like this?
Well, you have to be clear when you say penis ring, because I was just a claw, and that like means something different.
That's true.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, I don't know. But you know,
ring of penis. Anyway, okay, go
penis
on.
Ring. I think they really meant a cock ring or something. I don't know. So maybe because they don't know.
We're
they don't know.
Cocky here, people.
Okay, so firefighters had to use a grinder.
I'm sure that they did.
So they had to use a grinder to slice through a metal penis ring after it got stuck around a man's testicles for a couple of days. Mm. I think people enjoy that. Some people probably. I don't know. So the crew from Ilford were called to King George Hospital at 2 a.m. on Thursday after the unfortunate man was taken in. A fireman told the Standard, that's the website, the Standard, they had to use a hydraulic pedal cutter. More commonly used to cut people out of crashed vehicles to slice through the metal ring. Mm-hmm. So he said, to put in layman's terms, he tried to put his veg in the ring as well, but it stopped the circulation and became stuck. Oh, okay. It had been like that for a couple of days, and I think it must have got to the point where he knew he needed to do something about it.
He needed a hand.
Yeah, probably, yeah. It was swollen and funny, and a funny color.
I bet. If it's been on for a couple of days.
A couple of days, yeah.
Don't they know any erection lasting than 4 hours, I need to go to the hospital and see a doctor?
I thought when you have an erection for more than 4 hours,
that's what I just said.
Your friend.
They call a hooker.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just...
So the fireman said the man had tried cutting through the ring himself, but gave up and contacted the emergency services.
What could go wrong?
I know, right? I can do this myself. Crews were called to the hospital emergency room and managed to safely free the man after a short struggle. So, yes. I've used the cock ring before, and I am afraid of that. Mm-hmm. So I have the one that snaps on. So I, easy release. I don't know. But I've seen some that are really solid metals, right?
Yeah. Well, for the same reason too. I like the ones that stretch. And the stretch and snap. So I mean, but that's still one solid piece. But yeah.
Yeah. Stretch and snap's easier to get off, except for when it pulls the hair, then it hurts. But no pain, no gain.
Yeah, that's right. So yeah, it's I could imagine somebody getting stuck in that. And what do you do? You really have to wait. Okay, fine. You have your cock ring in there, and you get hard, and it's stuck there for a while, right? Mm-hmm. And if it doesn't go down, or you have to wait, you really have to wait, or
this is the EMT in me. I mean, I was wondering, did he have like Viagra or something like that too? Because that sounds odd that it would.
It sounds like the cock ring was too small to be used in the first place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If it got on, he couldn't get it off. Mm. So apparently he didn't know how to use one and have the right properly sized.
Maybe it was his first time and probably he won't do it again. No.
There are plenty of rubber ones out there.
Yeah. Yes. I'm sticking with rubber or snap-ons.
Or again, you know, that's where rope comes in handy.
That's right.
Yeah, the quick release and yeah, you don't have to deal with that. So.
That's right.
Oh, one thing about rope I wanted to ask. Yes. Have you ever thought about suspension?
Actually, I'm proud to say that in November of last year, November 2016, I did my first suspension.
Wow. Yeah. I think that's a big feat. I mean, FEAT. Okay. Big feet. I know you like feet.
Damn it, you got me all excited. Okay. I was up in Chicago visiting a friend who had a basement dungeon and had a wench. And so I brought my rope up and everything. And I had another friend who loved to be tied up. So we worked it out. And now, granted, I will say, like, the guy weighed like a 120 soaking wet. And I needed to like clean it up a little bit, but I did it, and it was a really intense thing because like I did him like kind of mummification style where he was like all that, and then he was lifted up, and then I got underneath his body as he was suspended above me, and then I like slowly like spun him around, and I watched him spin. I'm like, this is so cool. So, but
maybe we should do you, Maynard.
I'm light enough, right?
Yeah.
Which reminds me. So if you have to do that,
yeah.
I would imagine there's some kind of science you have to do. Like, this is the amount of rope. How much weight do you have? I need this amount of rope this kind of rope.
I will tell you right now. If they had used rope bondage in high school to teach things like anatomy and physiology and physics, I would be having my master's degree right now because it's like. Especially with like suspension, because it's like, okay, well, you have to calculate the toe capacity as well as the you know, velocity, and you have to, you know, you have to make sure that you're pulling from the torso and not the limbs and everything that you, and weight distribution. You have to think about all these things, and it's crazy, but it's it makes you smarten up for sure. But no, there is definitely a science to it. So
yeah,
and especially with, I mean, there is with any kind of bondage and knots, but I mean, especially with rope too, because I mean that you want to make sure that it is a safety thing too. So,
yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So I guess if I tie you up, Ray, that's not going to happen.
You're not going to. No. You're not near me with any rope.
Oh, okay. All right. If I ever going to tie you up,
yeah,
I
need... maybe, you know.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I might just make, you know, rabbit ears on you.
You'd end up putting a noose on me, and then I'll be game over. So.
That is right.
Oh, my goodness.
I ain't into that kind of play. Well, yeah, I am, but...
Not in that role. Well,
yeah. Not that kind of suspension,
yeah.
Though.
Yeah.
Joseph, thank you so much for joining us in the show. That is awesome.
Thank you, guys, and thank you. And if you wouldn't mind, can I just do a quick little shout-out?
Sure.
Sure, definitely.
Y'all who are mentioned in the book, I just wanted to say real quick, thank yous to the following people, Daddy Lloyd and Sir Robert and Richard, Scott, Leo, Bill, James, Mike, Tyler, Archer, Tim, Bayless, Mark, Robert, Texas, James Vaca, Ray, Worman, Scott Weitzel, David Wilson, and Stephen Wilson. Thank you guys. And thank you. I love you. And thank you for making this happen. So.
Awesome. That is awesome.
Yeah. Yes.
So how can people contact you again?
Okay. Well, I am on Facebook as Joseph Swartz, Swartz. I do have a Facebook page for The Initiate too. If you go on Facebook and then go to The Initiate Novel, all one word.
The Initiate Novel.
Yeah, I can get messages through that way. And also the book itself is available on Amazon in both paperback and Kindle.
So, all right. Yeah. Thank you. We'll put the links on the website for our audience. And before we go, special thanks to Caesar for the great articles on Facebook. We are on facebook.com/gaygeekbizarre. If you want to contact us, send your emails to show@gaygeekbizarre.com.
Or you can call and leave us a voice message at 281-947-2327. That's 281-947-2327. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter. We're on Google Play, iTunes, and Stitcher Radio.
Yes, and go to the official website at gaygeekbizarre.com. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and we'll catch you guys next week. Bye.